Turn It Up. You're listening to Live and Loud with the Lord Nelson. That is.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, you know who it is. It is the big guy with the big show. Yeah, the Lord Nelson, that is, from the podcast Live and Loud with the Lord on the CMS Network with Five Royals Entertainment. And ladies and gentlemen, we have a representative of an amazing band. Yes, indeed. You see the pictures up here and stuff. You guys see him doing a little something different, but I just want to highlight these great individuals. And he's going to represent his band. But before we get into that, you know, I've got to do what I do, to read a little something about him that I've written after listening to the music. And I'll do it a little something like this. Ladies and gentlemen, when you talk about melodic death metal, my next guest embodies the very spirit of the genre. They possess a groove that is infectious with vocals that complement the instrumentation beautifully. The tempo changes are effortlessly commanded by these dope musicians as the vocalists rise, the rhythm amazingly in the pocket, whether melodic or death. Unbelievable, man. I am honored to have them bless the Live and Loud with the Lord podcast with their presence. And without further ado, I welcome for you the Funeral Procession. Yeah, what's going on, bro?
How you doing?
Yes, indeed, my brother. So, first question is always for everybody is, where are you from?
I'm from Fort Worth, Texas.
Fort Worth, man. So, you know, my brother, I'm in a band called Plastic Catastrophe, and Matt Acevedo, he lives in Fort Worth, man. So,
nice.
Yes, indeed, man. So, I know the next time I'm down there, man, we got to hook up, man, because there's some more people down there. I think the Intemperate Sons are down there, man. We all going to have to hook up and have a good time, man. Most
definitely. Absolutely. Yes, sounds good to me.
So, what's the best thing about being from there?
Best thing about being from Texas?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Weather. I hate the cold with an all-consuming passion. Of course, the sacrifice for that is you have Texas drivers, which are probably the worst drivers, and any weather condition, you're going 50. It doesn't matter if it's a light rain or if it's a little cold outside.
Yeah. But I don't know. South Carolina drivers might be a little worse, man. I'm trying to tell you. They like to rubberneck a lot, man.
Before I ever got into music or anything, I was a truck driver. I've been to every state, and boy, I can tell you, Texas has some unique drivers. So
that's all love. So I'm a very visual person, and when I read the funeral procession, I see exactly that. I see that. I mean, I see everything. And so, does the name inspire your content in any way?
I think it's just that's not that it inspires it, but I think it's more of like a reflection of the kind of tones that we're going for. So, I mean, whenever we're talking about what we sing about, the type of music that it is, it's generally going to address things that are darker imagery, maybe more storified horror, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And so it's like the name just reflects that tonality. And that's kind of why it's stuck through all the years.
Yeah, listen, awesome. Well, in your early years, what were your, and I don't know if you can speak for the rest of the guys, but in your early years, what was your parents' choice of music, and has any of that music influenced you?
Oh, boy. So my parents I was actually raised just by my dad.
Okay.
And so I had my dad and my grandparents, and I think my grandpa would sometimes listen to Ray Stevens albums.
Ray Stevens!
they call him the Flash? Yeah. I don't think it influenced it that much. But I'd listen to a bunch of oldies, like old oldies, you know, some doo-wop and stuff.
Right.
Love that. Yeah. And still do to this day. We just don't have that golden oldie station out here no more.
Right.
You know, really, I transcended personally into the music First time hearing Metallica, stuff like that on the radio. Yeah. And started making that edge over to more metal.
I got you.
As time went on.
Okay, look, let me add your other. I didn't know whether it's just gonna be you.
We got some latecomers.
Yeah, Zodion is coming in right now. Is that how to say his name?
Zodion.
Gotcha. Let's get him on in here, man. It's all love. Zodion, I like this. It's a unique name.
Oh, yeah. I have the most boring name in the band. It's like Brian. And then we've got Nakoa and Zodion and Jaren and Jared.
Yes, indeed. So, the Destroyer. So is it Zod the Destroyer or Zod? I know it's Zodion, so how are we going to say that?
It's actually pronounced Zodion, but for the sake of the name, I called it Zod the Destroyer.
Zod the Destroyer. Hey, welcome, my brother. Welcome, man. And so, listen, we're really just getting started. I've asked Brian a couple of questions, but you know, it's all love. But you know, I don't mind revisiting what we did. So, is everybody from Fort Worth? Zodion, no. where are you from?
I live in New York.
Yeah, you see, listen, bam. Yeah, I'm rocking my little New York stuff today, man. Yes, indeed. So you live in what part of New York?
Upstate, towards Buffalo.
Upstate. Oh, man, it's cold, Brian.
Oh, yeah, it's cold. Yeah.
Oh, I've already told him he's got to get out of that cold, man. It's not going to do him no favors.
Man, up towards Buffalo, man, it's cold, bro.
Man, it was like 60 degrees the other day. It was way too hot. I would not last in Texas. I got to stay in the car.
So what's the best thing, my brother, about being from upstate New York?
Well, the pizza's good. And, and you know, Buffalo obviously is famous for Buffalo wings. So that's always a plus.
Right, indeed.
You know, and there's actually a lot of metal up here, too.
Yeah.
I think I read an article about Rochester being like the fourth most metal city in the country. Uh-huh. So, and I mean, it's true. There's a lot of bands up this way. And so I'm not originally from this part of New York, but I moved out this way. Yeah, there's a bunch of bands. I have a bunch of friends up here. But then, of course, you know, now I'm in a band that's 1,500 miles away, however that worked out. So I guess.
Hey. And listen, wherever it leads you to be in the best position that you can be in, man, it's good that the music will always lead you, man. There's no doubt about it. And so the last thing to catch you up, man, is in your early years, what was your parents' choice of music and has that music influenced you in any way?
Well, yeah, my mom was always into different stuff. You know, some stuff she liked heavier, some not. She was a singer herself, and you know, she always encouraged me for music and you know, to try out different little instruments and whatnot. But I didn't really pick anything up until I was a teenager. My uncle, who I hung out with a lot, he introduced me to bands like Daft Punk, Metallica, you know, Justice, and then like even like older classics like Tom Petty, you know, the Traveling Wilburys, like kind of older stuff like that.
Got you.
And so, and he played guitar, so I kind of like noodle around with him. I didn't like get too far, but as I went along, I got really into the drums.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I actually started on drums. I did that for a couple years, and then I was playing with like kind of like different bands, like high school friends and stuff. And then every time I go like in the music store or look on the like classifieds for bands, they all want a bass player.
Right.
And I was like, man, why does everyone want a bass player all the time? Like, are there none around? And so I had this friend that we would hang out all the time and like play Guitar Hero and stuff. And so I start playing the bass parts on Guitar Hero. And I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty cool, because everyone always says like, oh, you can't hear the bass or bass is lame or whatever. But I'd be kind of jamming out on it. And, you know, I was just playing all the time. And one day he's like, you know, man, why don't you actually just get a real bass and try that? And I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. And so I went and got some, like, you know, some like cheap, like bass in a box kind of kit. You know, I did that with my drums for a little while. Then I had to move, and I didn't really have space for my drums at the time. It was like a cheap kit, and I was like, whatever. So I just sold them. I figured I might pick it up later, but at that point, I was getting way more into the bass guitar, and I just kept at it. And you know, like 11 years later, here I am. So
awesome, man! Listen, we all have a story. That's your journey, and look where you are now, playing beautiful music, man. You know,
yeah, dude. Now I got it hung up on my wall back here.
Hey, I see. No doubt, no doubt. So for both of you, of course, when did metal fully grab your attention, and when did melodic death metal become your genre of choice?
I'll let Brian start.
Yeah. For me, metal really solidified in my sphere whenever I started listening to Metallica.
Right.
And it was like, this is great. I want a little bit heavier. And I kept inching it forward until I discovered stuff like Cannibal Corpse and stuff like that. I was like, oh, yeah, now we're getting somewhere. And then, I started getting a little bit older, and it was like, you know, I could see how all this kind of sounds similar. So I started seeking out other stuff and found like the Opeths of the world and stuff like that. Right. And then, you know, right around that same time is whenever they were actually looking for a bassist for the funeral procession, which is what I originally did.
Right.
And I hit them up. We played. We had a great time. I came back, practiced, loved the music, and it just kind of gelled, but we didn't have any singer. And so what I did is I was like, I can sing, let me just take some voice lessons. Right. And you know, after a while it was like, okay, I don't want to play bass anymore, I just want to sing. this is a lot more fun than I thought it would be. And then
that's just like a quick aside, that's kind of how James from Metallica started singing. He was playing guitar and they couldn't find a good singer. He's like I'll just do it, whatever. Right. And so, you know, now I look at him. So
hey, listen. However it happens, man, it just works out the way it's supposed to be, man. And so now you guys have this collective that is a great collective. So it's really, really cool. So what is it about the genre that speaks to you louder than the others?
I'd say for me, honestly, you know what? I'll give you a little anecdote. So my buddy told me to check out this cool band. And he's like, man, like I'm super into them. They're super cool. Check them out. And so I check them out, and you know, I just find myself, I'm kind of like, eh, whatever. And I'm like zoning out. I'm kind of getting bored. And what I realized is, you know, they didn't really have like enough dynamics for me. The big thing, I guess, about melodic death metal is that not only can it be aggressive, but it's very melodic, it's clean.
Yeah.
And I find that I like the dynamics when bands can like pull it back.
Right.
Because, you know, like there's bands like Suffocation or like Dying Fetus, and like they're really cool and you can listen to them. But after like a few songs, I'm kind of like, I don't know. You know, so then I want to listen to stuff where, you know, they can bring it back, change it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. This band, they're not melodic death metal, but they do have, you know, clean sections. And I like them a lot is Fear Factory.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So like, you know, they're like super intense, super heavy, you know, and then, you know, they bring in the chorus, right. They sing, it's a nice part, slams back into the heavy.
Right.
And so when you have those breaks and that, and you know, those dynamic changes, the heavy feels heavier. You know, meanwhile, if you have a band where it's just like 100 all the time, it's like, eh, whatever. And you kind of get used to it. I mean, that's not always a bad thing. Like, you know, like I love Cannibal Corpse,
yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. But I'm definitely a big fan of the dynamics. You know, I got into metal very young. Like I said, like my uncle, he I was listening to some Metallica when I was like, what, 7? I think I got the Master of Puppets album when I was 8.
Yeah.
You know, and I just kind of went from there. I was big in the thrash. Cliff Burton was a huge influence. You know, then I got into bands like Mudvayne, Korn, like Slipknot, System of a Down. Right. And I just got into heavier stuff from there, like Fear Factory, you know, like Typo Negative, Cannibal Corpse, you know, just all these guys. And you know, like I'm pretty much into like any type of metal as long as there's like a cool song. You know, I'm not like, oh, this isn't brutal death metal, idiot. You know, like if I like the song, I like it. If it's cool, you know, if I don't, I don't.
Right. Indeed. So. I just always go with the, listen, if the song is hot to me, it's hot. I don't care what genre it is. I don't, it's just, if it's hot, it's hot. It's what it is, man, to me.
Yeah, man. You know, but like, so, like there's like, yeah, you got like, you know, rap songs alike and whatnot. So,
yeah. So how much do you guys like or dislike the fact that, you know, as I'm doing my research and people are always talking about Opeth and Catatonia, you know, I mean, we know that they're big bands and they're these guys, but you guys are who you are, though. You know, does it ever bother you that, you know, you always got to be compared to them? Or is it just like you just take it all in stride and it's what it is?
And to be compared with people like that, I mean, how could you take offense? It's like, you think we sound like Opeth and Catatonia? Shoot, yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And then if you think that's all you're going to get, you're sadly mistaken.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's like we're going to give you the plus. So that plus.
Right. Yeah. Like, I'll say, like, on my end, like, you know, like, you're going to get compared to at least somebody because people need to, you know, be able to categorize you and be like, hey, if you like this. And I mean, you know, I'll take it to this one comment that we got on a YouTube video. On a review, the guy said, he's like, man, the Catatonia is like my favorite band and Opeth is like top 10. So you better not be lying, telling me that they sound like both of them. Right. And he commented back like an hour later. He's like, that was so awesome. You were right. So yeah. I'm like, hey, I'll take it, man. To be compared to greats like that, I'll take it.
Oh, yeah. No. And listen, I read that. I saw it. I definitely saw that. So yes, indeed. So Brian, it's probably more for you. 2008 to 2011. Let's time machine mentally and talk about the genesis of the band.
Sure. 2008 to 2011. I mean, it was, I think we kind of went through what most bands initially stumble over, which is you've got the band. It's taking off. It's doing great. Uh-huh. It's doing better and better. Oh, something happened with the drummer. Okay, let's replace the drummer. Okay, well, let's bring in the guitarist, and the guitarist is going to go and play drums because he's pretty good. Yeah. And, oh, no, this new guitarist doesn't fit. Oh, God. And then disassemble, you know, and it's like, okay, well, let's try something different. And so me and Nakoa, who is the guitarist, and he's the main songwriter.
Right.
Actually, after that, we went and did another thing that was like primarily cleans, kind of still heavy, but still rockish. Mm-hmm. So we didn't fall off completely. But this project, because of what it was and what it is, it requires a certain level of musicianship from every person involved that we had a very hard time replicating. Whenever we started out, we had Mike Miller. He's a drummer from A Dozen Furies. They're the band that won that. I don't know if you remember the MTV show Battle for Ozfest.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. He was the drummer of the band.
Okay.
And so he had a name, you know, we had a, he did keys for us on this one, but he was a guitarist at the time, Mike Sanchez, who's just this insane level of musician. And he's actually still around with the band, but back then he was a guitarist. And then, you know, and then I came into the fold afterwards. So it's, and Nakoa, our guitarist, had already been with death metal band Prophecy before. So he had a little bit of a name. I was kind of coming in as an unknown. But then as those musicians dropped off, it was a little bit hard to replace them, you know, so it is what it is. And then life happens, you know, kids.
Life happens. That is the key thing right there, man. So many different personalities and all of the things, as they say, like life messes up the best plans. And it's a true statement, man, because so much stuff goes on. And when I'm speaking to all of the bands, seeing how it is so hard to keep these people together. And it's just crazy that so, you know, this person comes in, but it's kind of like, so Zod, you're here and you've got a different vibe probably than other people. And I'm going to ask a question about that later on. But the thing is that you have a different energy from whoever this individual is. So really the sound kind of changes. The energy might even change. But it might be a more beautiful thing because you guys had such a big gap in between and you guys doing all the things that you were doing. So from all that time that you guys were separated and then you come back like, you know, the transform, like what they say, Voltron, you come back, you know? So was that just the, you know, trying to find the right players? Was that the problem before, you know, to have such a big break in between? Or was it just the fact that you guys were just living and playing in other bands?
Yeah, actually, it was just kind of a coincidence because, you know, like I said, life happened. I ended up, you know, having a kid. And, I went back to school kind of later in life. So, in fact, I'm about to graduate a computer science degree.
Hey, congratulations, bro. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. It was it took forever, but it's whatever.
All a part of the journey, man.
Better late than never.
Of course.
But it was just kind of a thing where I had got back with Nakoa, and we were like, man, we never gave the funeral procession the proper CD it deserved. Mm. So let's just get back together and do a little studio project.
Right.
And it was like, okay, well, all right. Yeah, we've got the songs. Okay. And I laid down some like kind of pseudo vocal ideas, stuff like that. And then he's like, that's awesome. Let's get it over to Zodion. Let's see what he can do. And he sends back some amazing bass lines. And we're like, okay, well, we got the drummer coming in, Jaron. Yeah. You know, hey, you mind coming in for 3 days and just recording some drums for us? He comes in, absolutely destroys it.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
And then we go and we take a road trip down to Austin to meet up with Mike Sanchez, the keyboardist.
Right.
Give him the stuff, tell him a little bit of ideas, and, you know, he gets it. And then we get the album back, and it sounds so incredible that we're like, okay, well, there might be something here. Okay, well, let's do a little bit of promotion. And it just took off, like, way more than we were anticipating. We didn't anticipate having a band, but it just so happens that everybody that got involved with the project were just the right people. Like, we needed that amazing drummer. We needed that amazing bassist. We needed that amazing guitarist. We needed that. Everybody who just jumped in just did so good that it just became a band on us in like so suddenly. That's awesome. Like, okay, well, I guess we get to do this thing again, which is a blessing.
What's so crazy is I told you before, man, I see everything. So I'm traveling with you and I'm looking and I'm seeing just, I have a picture in my mind. I don't know if it's exactly like that, but I'm seeing the video. So I'm just watching it as you're saying that, and I'm getting goosebumps from it. Like, it's like a great story because this time in between, and then you guys really come back. And to me, I just think that's the way it's supposed to be, because now you have what you have, and this collective is a great collective. So that's the way it was supposed to be, man. You guys went through all your things, and now you're back and you're doing your thing, man. And it's really a lovely thing. So, Nakoa, Jared, you, Brian, Mike are the original members, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's the original crew.
Zod the Destroyer comes in, and Jared came aboard in 2023. So what have these two new amazing musicians, and they are, brought to the band that has elevated your sound?
Oh, man. From my perspective,
I want you to give them props. I want you to let it be known. Let them know.
From my perspective, Jaron is probably one of the best drummers in DFW, hands down. And we've got some amazing drummers here. And so for him to come in and put down what he did, you just listen to Critical Apparition.
Yeah.
There's that little breakdown middle section where we were like, just do any crazy thing you can think of, just lay it down as crazy as you can. Cause we wanted it to be like this panic riff sound, cause it kind of went with the flow of the song and everything. Uh-huh. And it gave him a chance to shine. Boy, he killed it. And then as far as Zodion coming in, like I said, I used to be the bassist, but I was, what are you playing on guitar? Do, do, do. Okay. Yeah. I can play that kind of too. And Zodion came in, and it's like he knows how to highlight the sound of the music without playing over the top of it, because you can have that obnoxious bass that's like trying to make themselves the focus.
Nicknamed with the scars. like those guys. But
Zodion has a way of just creating what's still a very rich sound, still very complex, but it's complementary to the song itself. I very rarely hear bassists do, and you can hear it on like Siren's Lament. I mean, you can name any number of songs. There are parts where you're just like, "Damn, that bass!"
Critical Apparition is one that gets a lot of praise for that kind of like that clean break after the heavy, where I kind of like go off on my own, and then Winter's Grasp right in the middle during that clean section. You know, I bring it down low, and I think it really just beefs it up.
Oh yeah.
You know, like I've just had a lot of, you know, different inspiration over the years. And one of the classic things that I always kept to heart was like, you know, the drums and the guitar are like the bricks, mm-hmm. right? Of like a structure, and the bass is the mortar, right? That kind of brings it all together.
I like it.
So on their own, they sound good, but you need to glue them together and make them both sound good. Right. Yeah. And like, you know, like I have a lot of parts where I do the, like lead bits or some bass solos, you know, but I only do them if I think it'll sound good. Mm-hmm. Like in Forsaken, I'm very dialed back, you know, but then on a song, like, again, like Critical Apparition or even, In Still Silence, I just kind of, you know, do my own thing. And I find parts where I think it would sound cool. I'm just like, you know, I don't think so much like, oh, like what technical part can I put in here? Or, I wonder how much noodling I can do. I'm more like I hear the song and I think, man, if I did this, it would sound really cool. Right. Now let me just try to do that. You know, mm-hmm. like how do I do that? And how can I approach that? There's some parts where I really had to think outside the box, to achieve kind of, you know, what I did, but it paid off in the end. So.
Indeed. Well, let me ask this question. Do you guys feel the freedom or have the freedom to just be you? And so like you playing your bass parts and you playing your parts, and it's just like, we're good. You know, I mean, of course you're going to critique things and you want it all to be harmonious and everything, but do you guys have the freedom, or do you give each other the freedom to be creative like that?
I wish Nicole was here to answer that one. Cause he's the songwriter. Okay. Right. So we're going to get this little idea of a song.
Okay.
But what made this album so great is it was just basically Nakoa was able to just hand it off to the different people mm-hmm. and let them come back with whatever they did.
Okay, awesome.
And it just was awesome. Perfect. Everybody awesome. Came back to it with like, that's great. Thank you. You just made the song that much better.
Yeah, yeah. That really speaks every to the talent that you guys have and the respect that you have for each other. That is a great thing to have when you are these different entities, these different mindsets that are working together. And so that makes the band, man. So that's lovely, man. I love Absolutely. That, man. It should be that way. So all of you have extensive band experience. You played in other bands. And so what makes the Funeral Procession a great band to be in beyond those other bands?
Well, from my perspective, being a newer guy, Nakoa and I had been friends online for like 6 years. Right. And, you know, we have like, you know, like our own kind of like friend group, like, you know, we just talk about like bass guitars, whatever else, mm-hmm. you know, but, like we were friends before, and, you know, he and I would kind of collaborate on like projects here and there. And so, you know, when this album came out, he reached out to me. He's like, hey, you know, would you want to play bass? And like, you know, like he can play like a bunch of instruments. And with this album, he said, you know, normally I would kind of write everything myself, but he's like, you know, I just want to like focus on guitar, and I'm going to hand off the other things, you know, cause it can be hard if you write like, you know, if you write the whole song to hand it over to someone else and be like, listen, don't mess this up, right. you know, but you know, like we had collaborated before, you know, he had, you know, seen me play other stuff and covers, and he's like, man, you know, just like you want to do the album. And I said, all right, cool. You know, is there anything you want in particular? He's like, just, you know, just do it your style. And I was like, all right, you know, I'll send it to you just, you know, to double check. And, you know, the only thing that we really had to double check was, cause I mostly just did it by ear mm-hmm. is, you know, like if I was like, syncing with one of his parts, we just had to make sure that those were in line. But otherwise I pretty much had freedom to do what I wanted. And that's a really fun part about this band, because we all kind of get equal input. Like there's other bands where like one guy might just dominate everything.
Right.
And then you're kind of like, all right, I'll do what I can. But, you know, in this band, like, we're all highlighted. I think we're all very much shown in the spotlight on this album in different parts. And, like, no one kind of buries anyone else. Like, we're all just there and we're all together. And, you know, like, we each can shine. But then, like, in like, really heavy parts where we all sync up, like, the end of Critical Apparition or just, like, you know, like, any of, like, the hammering riffs that we do, like, when we lock in, you can feel it. And, like, we're all one, but we're all individuals too. And I think that's what I like about this band.
Yeah. For me, it's kind of a different aspect. Obviously the music is really important, but I think my favorite thing about this band is how professional everyone is and the way that they're going about it. So I think whenever I reflect upon the state of metal, it kind of saddens me a little bit because I feel like there's so much good music that isn't getting out there to people, but it's because we haven't taken the kind of like really smart approach that like hip hop rap did in collaborating, doing these like remixes, like getting content out there regularly, pushing that single. Like we should have gotten on that bandwagon early and really created a lot of engagement from metalheads, but it tends to be that, you know, here's your album every 3 years. Want to come see us while we're on tour? That's your level of connection. And so, like, a part of what we're trying to do now that we're able to put together a band is we want to take not only that foresight into the important part of marketing, but also, like, the level of hard work that everyone in this band is capable of, like professional hard work,
right?
You know, and when we were putting in the time and promoting the album, you could just see the numbers ticking up. You could see it reaching people that are otherwise ignored in metal. You know, we have to expand the fan base if we want it to be easier for metal musicians to make this their full-time job. I think, you know, it's incumbent upon us to do the professional work as well, which everyone in this band is good at.
Yeah, you're the first person I've heard that about the collaborating thing, man. So when you said that, I was just like, wow. That really is something, indeed, to see that, you know. Listen, it's a community also. Music, of course, is just one big thing, all these different genres. Yeah. The music is beautiful. There's nothing better than music to me. It is the best thing in the world. I say that music is a time machine. It just Absolutely. Can take you to other places, you know, just that quickly. Like, man, I'm back here and I remember this and I was with this person or I was hanging out here or, you know, music is the greatest thing in the world. So you saying that and looking at the other genres doing stuff, yeah, that would probably be amazing, to be honest.
It would be very prudent for us to do that. And it can be a mutually beneficial thing for, you know, maybe a slightly bigger band to hook up with a smaller band and put together collaboration, maybe a song, maybe a cover, something, you know, and really expose both bands to a different market. You know, you see that in rap and hip hop all the time, you know, and it's the big guys bringing up the little guys.
Right.
But all that does is expand your fan base even more for everybody, you know, and then we ought to have mansions too, all right? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, like everyone thinks it's a competition, but it really is a community. And one thing that if you want to talk about, like, you know, like Time Machine and other genres, something that really people don't do too much anymore is what they used to do in jazz, which is called quoting, which these days people would say, oh, you stole that riff, you know, but it's quoting because you're paying homage.
Yeah.
And a modern example I can give you is Devin Townsend, from when he was in Strapping Young Lad, had a song called Love, and they have this riff. And then Machine Head later comes out with a song called Beyond the Pale. It's the same riff.
Right.
But then you think, oh, that's kind of cool, you know, and Devin Townsend quotes himself. There's a couple songs where you're like, wait, I've heard these lyrics before, or wait, I know this song. This was on this album this many years ago.
Right.
But it's cool because it connects everything. Like a progressive concept album, like they have a riff in the beginning, that riff comes back like later in the album and it connects it all together. These days, you know, people think of it as like theft, but you know, back in the day it was like, hey, I love your music, I'm gonna put your music in my music. That's like the highest honor. So,
well, yeah. I've said this multiple times on multiple shows. I watched Quincy Jones have a conversation with Chuck D many years ago. Quincy Jones said, "When we as musicians, you take 10 of the artists that you love, take one thing from each of those artists, you'll have your own sound. But yes, you're still influenced by them, but you'll have your sound. So there may be things they're like, hey, that sounds familiar. Yes, but then you make it into what you're doing. So nah, man, both of them, listen, great segment, man. Both of what you guys said is just unbelievable, man. I love that, man. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So let's talk about the amazing Instill Silence. So you dudes have returned with a definite banger, man. I love it, man. So are you delivering a specific message to we the listeners, or is this just an amazing collection of songs?
I think that it is kind of storytelling mm-hmm. to a certain degree. Things like Winter's Grass and stuff like that are just meant to be this story with like kind of a dark reflection. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of the songs are kind of supposed to be more of a reflection on the darker aspects of love. Because mm-hmm. you can love somebody like Bitter Remnants. You're bitter at a breakup. I mean, that's right. an emotion that we can all relate to. But mm-hmm. if you're able to express it in a genuine way,
right,
the anger with the growls, but then the singing that kind of gives you that sense of despair. I mean, anybody that's, you know, been through something like that can relate to it, only now they don't have to go through it alone.
Right.
I think that's why you find a lot of metalheads are pretty well-adjusted human beings, regardless of the fact that, you know, they're, you know, in this metal scene and perceived differently. They're just generally good people.
Of course.
And I think it becomes because they kind of get that anger out in a mosh pit in an easy way, you know, and
right.
Or they'll go to these doomier songs because they're going through an emotion and they just can understand, okay, I can relate with this. It lets me get it out of my system and I can just go about my life.
Indeed.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of where that stems from.
Yeah, I'll add to that part. Like, the main thing that I've heard really is that, you know, it's good to hear music that sounds like how you feel, you know. And there's a lot of music out there that, like, you know, it's focused on like happiness, or, you know, maybe you're just at the club, or mm-hmm. you know, you're just hanging out or whatever. But, you know, metal, and why metalheads gravitate to it is because, you know, like, you like, if you're angry or you're sad or you're feeling down and out, and then you find a band that, you know, like maybe has the lyrics or the sound, and you're like, man, like, I can relate to this. I, you know, and, right. you know, someone else feels like how I do, mm-hmm. you know? And so the album really is, you know, like people say that, like you write the best music, you know, when you're, you know, the most down and out. Right. But, you know, it's definitely reflective of, you know, where some of the members were at the time. And, you know, it's just straight from the heart, you know, just raw emotion. And I think that's just the truest writing. And a big thing about metal is that it's, you know, one of the most, it's like, it really, in my opinion, is the most honest of the genres mm-hmm. because like we're not playing metal to go make like a ton of money. We're not playing metal to, you know, like be super famous or whatever. Like, we're not, you know, writing like formulaic kind of like catchy pop songs. Like,
right.
you know, we're writing music that we like, that, you know, feels and sounds, you know, how we do. And, you know, and it's a great way just to, you know, just to express yourself. One, and it's just like a good, you know, catharsis to kind of, you know, just have the outlet for that kind of thing. And it comes through, and, you know, the fans feel it too. So I'm really happy about that.
Of course, absolutely. Man. You guys are doing a great job with that. There's no doubt about it. So what was the writing process like? And I know you kind of touched on it a little bit. And how long did it take to record, mix, and master this album?
Well, we did that all in-house.
Mm-hmm.
It was... actually probably lightning fast, to be honest, because me and Nakoa, we got back together and started hanging out and thinking about doing the funeral procession in August
mm-hmm.
Of last year. And we pretty well had all the lyrics written and all the guitars and stuff written within like a month or two.
Right. Awesome.
Got it over to the members to get their, you know, input on it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I would say the hardest part is we were in like a, it had to be like a 8x16 room when we recorded the drums. And we recorded the drums in house and oh my God, that sucked so bad. We are not doing that again. Because you would have like, you know, because of the size of the room and the way that sounds reverberate, there was just 10,000 problems. So we're having to soundproof the room.
Right.
We're having to, oh, goodness. Yeah, no, forget that. We're not doing that again. We're going to a studio to record next time. That's for sure.
Well, it turned out magnificent, though, man. It turned out great. And so that leads me into the next thing I wanted to say is that you have a lot of different elements in your music. And I love the way you transition into each, you know. So was this a band decision or, you know, the creativity of one mad scientist in the band? Is it just Nicola?
Nicola does all the guitars. Mm-hmm. I've always written all the vocals. But the idea behind the vocals is I always felt like it would be really boring if we were all singing or all growling or all screeching. Right. I wanted all of it in there.
Right.
And honestly, I never growled before this album. In fact, I learned to growl for this album about 2 to 3 weeks beforehand.
Really?
Yeah, so that's 2 or 3 weeks of practice. I've gotten a little bit better, but I appreciate how difficult it is to growl. but I really wanted it to just be this kind of thing where you're always kind of shifting, but in a way that makes sense.
Right.
I want the growlings to be this feeling of anger. I wanted the screams to be like punctuation marks to it. I wanted the cleans to kind of tell a story. Like, there's a way that I just kind of hear it in my head, and that's the way I write it. And back in the day, it was Jared, our original guitarist, would do all the growls. Nicola would do all the screams, and all I would do are the clean vocals. But Jared wasn't back yet for the growl parts. That's why I learned to growl until after we had finished most of the album. And so I picked that skill up, and I figured I better keep doing it because there's not that many singing parts for me to just be standing up on stage holding the microphone, kind of looking around, you know? So,
hey, man, as a vocalist, man, you know how important we are, man. Stop playing. Oh,
I know.
Stop playing. Come on, man. But no, hearing you say that, I know I think the same way. It's like when I'm writing, man, I want everything to just be a certain, you know, certain inflections. This, and I'm telling you guys, man, the changes that you have, and I, you know, going back to those guys that did the review on you guys, and usually I don't like to watch stuff like that because I just like to have my own opinions about stuff. I don't want anybody leading the witness. I like doing my own thing. So I watched a little bit of it, and I'm just listening to them, and I was just like, well, I don't know if maybe they're more metal than I am, and that's really what they are. But I was like, I don't know if I agree with them about the trend. I love the transitions, guys. I love them. I think it's beautiful. I think it takes away from, not that you have any monotony going on. I think that you guys understand that, no, we don't just want to just yell at everybody just nonstop. Yeah, that gets a little bit, come on, man. To have those changes come in there.
The watch and,
yeah, to have those changes come in there.
For 5 minutes.
It adds so much to it. And I think it's beautiful. I think you guys did a great job with it. It's unbelievable. And so Distilled Entertainment, of course, my brother, Double R, Ryan Ross, that's my guy. Patrick also, they're just cool brothers. Ryan and I, we toured together, when I was with Stuck Mojo. And listen, this is when I first got my first taste of really being around the heavy death metal vocals, to hear him do it every night for a straight month, to hear Zoli from Ectomorph do it. And I'm just looking at them, and I was just like, now I get it. Now I get it. I'm here. And once again, Vengeance has those changes also. That's why I love them. So, man, listen, it's just a great thing. So now when I hear you guys do those things, I appreciate it so much. So I get it. You guys did a great job. It's an amazing album. There's no doubt about it. So the track listing, I'm going to kind of just run through them. You guys just tell me how you feel about the song or what do you think about the song. And so let's start off with Bitter Remnants.
Boy, I can't imagine a better way to slap somebody in the face with the music than that one. That just pops right from the get.
Yes.
It's almost hard for me. I'll be listening in my ears, right? Da, da, da. I got to just go.
Yes, indeed.
I love it.
Bitter Remnants is definitely a killer opening track. And the you know, it's just, it slaps you in the face, but then right there, you know, we transition into that dynamics, and then, you know, that chorus just snaps you, like, right. Like, you know, when it says, my mind is drifting now, like, gets stuck in your head and just flows. And then, you know, we go right back into it, just blast beats right off. You know, and so, and you know, and it's great that you mentioned the transitions, because, you know, some people say, oh, they changing parts too much, like, maybe, you know, this song should have been like just heavy. And then we're like, no, because it wouldn't be heavy if we took out the clean parts. Right. It would sound lame, you know. Right. So
I agree.
And but yeah, Bitter Remnants, definitely super sick song. I managed to sneak in a bass solo, of course. So I got it one in there.
Oh, next time we're gonna monitor that. We'll turn it down, you know.
Well, listen, sure. Hey, listen. Listen, Zod. I don't understand, man. When I always used to laugh because they used to give my boy Sean Delson. Sean Big Bass Delson, as I like to call him. They used to give him hell all the time about the bass. I was just like, man, what's the deal, man? Why you guys always hating on the bass player?
It's been handed down for generations. Yeah, okay.
That's this what it is.
Long-standing tradition. Okay, we gotta turn down the bass. Okay. Metallica did it. How wrong could it be? You know, hey, like,
that's just wild. They know what's up. Siren's Lament.
That was the first song that I started writing and the last one that I finished.
Really?
Because I would just get stuck on it. I was like, I don't know what I want to do here. Uh-huh. Like, all right, I'm going to put it down. I'm gonna work on this other song. Boop, finished it. Okay, let's come back to Sirens. Oh, golly, what do I want to do here? That song stumped me for a while. But, man, really? I'm so happy with the way it turned out, especially indeed. Through the clean section.
Of course.
That's probably one of my favorite parts to actually sing.
Yes.
Like, it just, yeah, I related to that. That song specifically is about, like, the toxic relationship that you keep kind of drifting back into, mm-hmm. hence the Siren's Lament.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, I think that's another topic that some of us can relate to.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brian's been through some shit, obviously.
Been through some shit, yeah. I got some stuff to sing about. We ain't done. Yes, sir.
Awesome, though. Young man, talk to me.
Yeah, Siren's Lament was the first song that I had heard from the project, mm-hmm. When Nicole, he was like, hey, check this out. You know, this is like my first track for the album or whatever. I'm checking it out. I'm like, man, this is some good stuff. And he's like, hey, man, like just jam something over it. You know, just, you know, send me your ideas. I'm like, all right. He's like, oh, man, that's, you know, like the super sick. I'm like, you know, I like how you do this part and like kind of sync up here and then deviate there. So. You know, I got into it from there, and I'm like, man, like there's some, you know, pretty intricate parts here, you know, and like, because like I'm not one to say, oh, this is too hard, I'll do something easy. I'm like, if I think it'll sound cool, I have to do it.
Right.
And so then I later, he's like, trust me, the other tracks be harder. I'm like, come on, thanks. But you know, there's that clean section that we do there, and you know, I take a totally different approach, you know, than normal, but you know, I definitely. Cause it's like, you know, the guitars are just kind of like doing their thing. It's swaying. Brian's doing his thing. And so I'm like, how can I kind of elevate and how can I fill in, you know, this kind of space?
Right.
Cause I don't want to step on anybody, but if I think I have room, I'm like, okay, well something should go here,
yeah.
You know? And so I ended up doing some bass leads again, but you know, I try not to do them in a way that's annoying or, you know, newly. I'm like, how can I make the song better? And that's always how I approach every song.
Gotcha. Dope, man. So, Brian, before I go to the next song, do you write, do you just have melodies in your head or do you wait for music from Nicola before you start doing your thing?
I wait for music from Nicola.
Okay, so you write the music. Okay.
Yeah, and there's a very specific way that I do it, and it's that I'll have to sit with the track for a minute. I'll listen to it until I'm familiar with the riff.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll kind of just hum out what I'm hearing in my head.
Of course. Yes.
And it'll just be nonsense. And I'll usually record it with just a da 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 da, you know, whatever. And then as soon as that's done, I'm counting the cadence. Okay, this is I do six syllables here, I do eight syllables there. Now, awesome, what emotion does it evoke? Okay. Yes. And then I'll kind of wordsmith from there and fit everything in until I've got what I'm hearing in my head. And I've got the melody. And also the words that match how it makes me feel like what I feel is going on at that part.
Well, see, you got, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, just to extrapolate on that part, because that what he said kind of made me remember, we actually write our parts very similarly in that regard. Like, he'll wait for the music and he'll think about the vocal parts. I write my bass in a very specific way where I like to have the guitars and the drums first, right? Like those bricks, like I said. Mm-hmm. I have to have those first. And what I'll do is like I won't write anything out like on like Guitar Pro or notes or anything. I just like to write it on my bass. Mm-hmm. And so I'll just listen to the track. I'll try to play along with it. And then I try to play by ear too, because then like I don't necessarily know, you know, what chords he's doing per se. And so the way that bass works, like, you know, if I can put in different notes, you know, it might like, you know, it'll make it like a different chord, you know, maybe I play up higher and it'll change things around. And, you know, sometimes I might deviate out of that, but I like to play it on there because if it sounds cool, it sounds cool. Right. And there's a few sections where, I went down there for a video. And so we're playing the song. He's like, wait, you're doing this and I'm doing this. I'm like, yeah, I play it this way. He's like, that's totally bizarre. And I'm like, you know, it's actually kind of, we're doing this thing. He's like, oh, it's those little things like you don't even know, but they sound cool.
Right.
And it's later, you're like, we're doing two different things, dude. So
it works though, man. Listen, if it works, it works, man.
It works.
So I asked that question because me being like, okay, I'm a writer. Okay. I don't play any instrument, but I have music playing in my head like crazy, always. So when I write, I'm a big melody guy. So I'm always coming up with the melody. And so when I got with, even when Rich used to send me music, man, it's just so easy to write too. I was just like, man, come on, man. What are you talking about? You send me great music. I'm there. But Matt Acevedo, MMA, as I call him, the magnificent Matt Acevedo, from New York, mind you, but lives in Fort Worth. But Matt sends me that music. I'm so waiting for him to send me something. So to write to that music and get that vibe, and I do the same exact thing that you do. I'm like, yep. And then I just start freestyling. And then I'm just like, yep. Okay, that's the vibe for me. And then I just go to writing. And so it's just beautiful. Wow. It's just a great process, man. So anyway, man, thank you for that, man. I love that. I had to ask that question, yo. So Forsaken.
Forsaken was a track where I just really wanted to dial it back. Mm-hmm. It's because the song is it's a lot more somber, but it's more emotionally charged. And so I'm like, you know, this isn't a song where like I want to noodle or anything. Like, I'm just going to bring it back, you know, I put some low notes in there, but I'm like, I really want to emphasize the depth of the song and what we're talking about.
Right.
And, you know, I just let Nicoya and Brian go off. You know, I just wanted to pull back and let them have the full focus.
Gotcha.
Right. Absolutely. Anything yeah, Forsaken. Forsaken was that was one of the first ones that Nicoya had shown to me. Mm-hmm. It was very important to him that it just maintained that really somber feel.
Okay.
And so I just kind of reflected on that. Again, the darker sides of love is kind of what I was going for. Mm-hmm. And so it's supposed to just kind of reflect that you have been left and that feeling of rejection, that kind of forsaken feel. And so I'm really happy with the way that one came out and kind of the anger that it evokes whenever that happens. Because, I mean, if you're a guy, you're out there shooting your shot whenever it – whenever it doesn't land or when you think it's landed,
right.
You know, for whatever reason, it doesn't work out. That rage that kind of comes with it. So I wanted to encapsulate both parts of it. And that song really, I think, did good at that.
I got you. Well, like I tell my son, I'll say this to you, man. Just one of these Lord Nelson things that I say is that tell a woman that I might not be the only man for you, but I'm damn sure the best man for you.
There you go.
Excuse me, whether you like it or not. So, mm-hmm. Critical Apparition. Talk to me about that one.
Oh, yeah. That one's a lot of fun. That one is just kind of, whenever I was writing it, it was, I think Nicoya had sent me a message like, I'm having trouble sleeping or something. I was like, you know what? Because I was having a little bit of trouble with the vocals on that. I was like, that could be like a sleep deprivation type. Whenever you're not able to sleep and that kind of like dread feeling that's falling over you, and you can play into that apparition feel. So it's like that, you know, I don't know if I haven't had a whole lot of troubles with insomnia, but when I did, it felt like I was going to die. I hated it.
Right, right.
And so being able to kind of project that into that world where it's like this, again, kind of horrific story is painted from it. And it was a lot of fun to write that one. And awesome. Boy, the end of that one is probably my favorite thing to sing of all of them.
Got you.
That's the beat your chest one. I'm all about that one.
Critical Apparition is the one where I say, oh man, here is like some of my best riffs. And then also the one where I'm like, oh, that's a really annoying riff that I hate playing, you know, because like, you know, Nicole writes everything on his guitar with his, you know, his smaller strings. And then some parts I'm like, oh, when I got to double this, but you know, but now it's different. I'm like, dang it. You know? And so, the one that kind of fast riff after the intro riff, that one comes in like, and I'm just like, I'm listening to it. I'm like, what the hell is he playing? Right. You know, so I really had to take my time and figure that one out. I'm like, this sucks. I hate this. But of course now you listen to it and you're like, oh, that sounds awesome. You know, I'll tell you what, the version that we have now, we actually had to rewrite it because that first version was almost a little too intricate. It was like too much. Mm-hmm. And that was the version that I really was like, but this one I was able to, you know, I had the, a little slide in there in the middle of the fast riff that I think really works out. And luckily this version sounded a lot better. So
awesome. Yeah. So Brian, let me ask you this question though. Do you ever have it to where you've written, right? And it's beautiful and the vibe is what it is.
Oh yeah.
And then they come back and they change some shit and it just changes the whole song to you.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It used to drive me bananas. Not unless it makes it better, you know, but you know, I was just like,
I'll adapt damn, if guys, I have
why
to,
did you but... change that shit? The vibe was this. And now I've got to go back and rewrite this whole thing because you changed my whole perception of what it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've had that happen as we were riding along. You know, it's like, well, guess that's done. I'll try something else. That's fine.
Yeah, they did that to me with Forsaken because the drums originally, you know, the pattern was different.
Right.
And then he's like, hey, you know, let me send it over to Jaron, you know, get his drum track. I'm like, all right, cool. He sends it back, and I'm like, you know, usually wherever he plays, it just amplifies it. But one section, this long section, he changed the pattern. I'm like, now I got to re-record this whole thing, dude. Right. That's totally different.
It fucks you up, man. Yep. You know, it's just like, man, I'm here, man. This is so beautiful to me. And then you guys change it. And I was just like, that's all love though. But Matt and I never have to worry about it. We work so well together. Is if he changes something, it's still in line with what we're doing. So, you know, we allow each other that freedom to do that thing. So it's a beautiful thing, man. So Winter's Grasp, as you see, I put that up there though, you know, Winter's Grasp. Yeah.
Oh, I would say that. Oh, sorry. You can go.
Okay. I will. that one was, a novel. Mm-hmm. It took me a million years to write that stupid thing. But I will say that whenever it was done, it's probably my favorite as far as storytelling.
Yes.
So really the concept behind it is that, you know, this guy's kind of wandered into a forest or whatever, some wilderness landscape to die. Death sees him, approaches him, asks him, you know, why should you die? And tell me why you should live. And he can't say anything because he's there because the woman he loved died and he wants to die, wants to rejoin her. Wow. And so death, instead of granting him that passage, says, no, I'm not going to let you die until death is not what you crave. And it kind of drives him insane. And throughout the song, it's just about that coping with the idea that you couldn't die, even though that's the one thing that you want. And what you hear throughout the song is him kind of slowly shifting from being a mortal into a more ethereal creature, where you later discover he is death now. He transformed into death. And he doesn't see that as a bad thing. He sees it as a great blessing because, you know, death relieves pain. It lets you move on from the hurt of this world into a next plane of existence. Until such time as because he's kind of this ethereal being, he approaches someone, and for whatever reason, he says, you know, why should I let you live? And he hears himself speaking back to him. So it makes this loop back to himself. Mm-hmm. And he basically rejects letting him die because he knows how important death is.
Right.
And in doing so, death is not what he craves. And so he is released. And so it ends with the passage, that sung passage at the very beginning. And it took 10,000 words to get there. Boy, howdy, I love that song.
Man, let me tell you something, man. Do you know how deep you just got right there, man? You just took me on a journey, man. That is that is wild, because to hear you speak about, and these are your words, you know, this is your song that you wrote lyrically. So it's like, wow, man, you explaining that? That was something right there, man. I'm telling you once again, I'm so visual. So I'm there watching all this darkness, and he's like, yo, I can't give you that because that's what you crave. Listen, unbelievable, man. I love it.
Winter's Grass is definitely probably my favorite song from the record. And, you know, I definitely connect with the lyrics, especially because I love how, you know, the last passage is in the middle of the song with one transition. And then you have this big kind of epic ending into that clean section. Mm-hmm. But then at the end, the two of them get connected. So you have the sung passage and the epic transition got put together at the end, and it just blows me away every time.
Yeah,
you know, and probably one of my favorite anecdotes for this song is when I got done with the demo, I sent it out to Nakoa, and then he sends me back a voice message because he and Brian were both in the car. Mm-hmm. He's like, dude, you know, what the heck? You know, because we go into this section where it's like, dan, and then, you know, and then I go low on the B string. He's like, that B hit, dude. And I was like, what? You know, because it was just heavy. And I'm like, there you go. And, you know, just like, I didn't get super technical on this song as far as like the middle clean section. Like, I didn't really do like a bass solo per se, but that blues section, it was just, it really kind of reminded me of kind of like Load era Metallica in a way, just because it was like a bit different. And it's a total departure from the black metal that's the rest of the song.
Mm-hmm.
But I really loved that part. And I'm, you know, I remember Nicole was like, man, like, is it too different? Is it too much? I'm like, no, I think it's awesome.
Right.
And
right.
It's great. And, you know, and so like we go into it and I'm like, man, like, how can I just like really kind of like make this pop, give it that kind of like, you know, that like, you know, blues, you know, kind of vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, well, you know, let me go low on my B string, try that. And just it beefed everything up. And, you know, like I throw in like a bunch of harmonics in there, and just the whole thing flows so good together. And, you know, just that like that section alone is probably like one of my favorite kind of points on the album, because it's just so different from the rest of it. And it's just really unique. And I love how it all turned out.
Oh, man, just another amazing song, man. It's a great body of work, man. So, In Still Silence, the title track of the album. So, talk to me about this one, Ben.
Okay, so the idea for the band, the reason the album is In Still Silence is obviously because of the song, but that was actually part of our first like 5-song set from whenever we had originally started up the project. And we were kind of thinking, you know, it'd be neat to kind of come back and do the funeral procession and just kind of like put in one of the old songs and we'll like make that the title track and then maybe just keep going through. So if this does well, maybe we'll do another one. So, you know, we'll just keep adding that on until we get all 5 of those tracks re-released, but in a sound that's more where we're at now.
Of course.
And that's what that one is. And like, that's actually the only song I don't write lyrics for. Nakoa wrote that song well before I was ever involved with the band.
Okay.
He had the idea of lyrics in it, but he didn't even have the pattern. He just wrote the song and then he wrote the lyrics, and we kind of worked together and mashed them into the song till it like kind of just fit. Like everything he had written just happened to fit. And so we got that one done, and coming back and doing it again was a lot of fun, especially in that song. There's a keyboard solo towards the end of the song,
right.
That was not there originally. So that was a neat little change, you know. Other than that, I think the song is mostly the same as it was. But just that ending section with the little tap riff and that keyboard solo, that's about all we changed on that one.
Awesome. Yeah, dude, the the keyboard solo I think is a huge highlight. You know, because I remember I first heard it, I'm like, man, he's just going on that thing. And at least from my position, like, yeah, the song is kind of the same, but it's also been rewritten. I know, at least for all of my parts, I just totally went off on my own like I do. You know, I didn't like pay attention to the original song at all. I'm like, let me just change it up. You know, so in some clean passages, you know, I do, like some more noodling. I do some strumming patterns. You know, but the song is has so many technical sections and some very progressive riffs that I'm just like, you know, I'm just gonna lock in and just go at it. And yeah, another cool fact about this song is that Nakoa actually decided to play the drums on it. So Jaren does the drums on the other five tracks, but this one Nakoa plays drums.
Really? Okay.
And quick aside, Jared. He does some backing vocals as well, like in the intro and some other parts, and also back on Forsaken.
That's what he originally sang. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Back on the on Forsaken, our buddy Charles, he does that intro guitar solo. Mm-hmm. And a fun little aside about that is that he did that in just one take. Nakoa just said, hey man, you know, just go at it, hit record, and that's what came out. And he's like, dude, we're using that. Right. One take, that's all you need, dude.
I was so there in the room. It's he cool. just handed him the guitar and said, okay, here's the riff. He started playing it and he's like, okay, you're being recorded. He went,
he's like, all right.
Just went at it.
A super organic moment, man. That's love.
Oh, yeah. He's a great guitar player, and it's such a great section that I love that he contributed to it.
Indeed, man. Well, listen, thank you guys for all of that, man. I'm glad you really, you know, spoke about this songs, man, from your perspective, because they are your songs. So, you know, coming from you, it means something. We can have our perspective of what we think it is, which is cool. But to hear you say it, man, is truly all love. So what does success look like to you guys?
I know for me, I generally tend to set a series of goals that I would like to accomplish. Number one on my list is just get to another live show. So that first live show, that's a first step of success. Beyond that, love to get on some sort of like, at least some sort of small tour. That'd be the next step.
Right.
And then eventually I'd love, if I'm talking about my ultimate goal, I would love to play at Wacken. That would just be, yes, that would be indeed. The thing. That would be the thing. Don't even have to be main stage. That's further downstairs. We'll play one of the sides. That's fine.
That's an amazing energy there, man. You know, I've seen it, man. It's amazing energy, man. No doubt.
That's what about definitely you, man? Part of the goal.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, you know, like, I'm just glad that people listen to this music and they just connect with it in such a way. And that, you know, success doesn't mean like selling like a million copies or something, right. You know, like some of the responses that we've gotten where some people are like, dude, this is like album of the year for me. Mm-hmm. You know, some guys are like, man, like this album is so great. It's like some of my like favorite bands and, you know, just other stuff, you know, just the fact that, you know, it has such an impact for people, you know, like even if just one guy liked it and he was like, this album it rules, this is great. You know, this is so awesome that you guys brought this up, you know, yeah. So even if it was just like one guy, like that's success for me, we write for ourselves, like we don't write for anybody else, you know, going back to that transition thing, like some guys don't like something, but then you come along, you're like, I loved it. It was great.
Right.
You know? And so you can't write for anybody but you, because everyone's different, you know, everyone will like different things.
Indeed.
And, but you know, the fact that we can connect with people and, you know, people are like, yeah, like this is good. And like, you know, like even if all we did was like release the album and get all of the, you know, the acclaim and stuff, like even that'd be fine. Mm-hmm. But you know, the response was so great that, you know, it went from like just doing an album and a project to like, we got to do this whole, we got to do a whole band, guys. Like, we can't just taper off. People want it. So, okay.
No, that's awesome, man. And listen, once again, I appreciate that. So, why is the funeral procession a must watch and listen? Yeah, I want you guys to get on your soapbox and talk that shit right now. I want you to say it. I want to hear it.
Yeah, for me, I think it's a must listen just because of the uniqueness that we're bringing, because we're grabbing elements of everything. And just because what you've heard now might be from X, Y, and Z genre, I mean, we haven't even started down the path of introducing like the doom elements that we want to. We want to get more creative. There's a remix that we're doing for Forsaken that I can't wait for people to hear. Gotcha. Because again, that's another completely different sound. I want people to understand that it's not just, oh, well, if I want progressive, you know, death metal, or if I want melodic death metal, that's all these guys. No, you're going to hear everything.
Right.
You're going to hear everything that we have the capability of doing. And you might hear some things that you might not expect to hear. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, if you're going to listen, keep your ears open, because there's going to be some really cool stuff coming down the pipes.
Awesome.
We're not going to leave anybody standing. We're going to try and maintain our weekly drop schedule.
Yeah.
So there's always playthroughs, music videos, interviews, lyric one takes, you know, we want to keep people engaged and a part of the conversation. We want to stay on top of responding to people that like the music, you know, doing things to increase. We want to work with other bands. I mean, we're going to be doing a lot of interesting stuff. And I think, you know, being able to add to the entertainment of metalheads and maybe bring in some new people is really big.
No doubt.
Part of what we want to do.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. And then I'll start off with kind of a quote from the album review. And, you know, I guess I'm more paraphrasing, but the last band to sound anything like us stopped making music like this in 2007.
Mm.
You know, so it's been like 15 years or so. And, you know, anything that sounds remotely like us just has been void for all this time, you know? And so I think that's why people are really gravitating to it, is because it is unique. And, you know, even though you can draw the comparisons to X band or Y band,
right?
You know, you say, oh, it's like X band, but they're heavier. Oh, it's like Y band, but this, you know? And so, you know, we definitely try to add our own elements. And, you know, it's just a style that's been gone for a long time. You know, maybe like one or two bands was able to do it in their way, in their time, you know, but, you know, fast forward to now, it's just been something that has been, you know, lacking, which we were able to bring forth, you know. Like, you know, we have a bunch of content that's going to be coming out. You know, we have plans for shows and tours in the future,
mm-hmm.
you know, more, you know, music videos, lyric videos, whatever have you.
Right.
And, you know, we have like at least 60% to 80% of the next couple of albums already written. Like, you know, like we have no signs of stopping. And because of just the awesome response we've gotten, like the 1 month that we had the album up before we decided to, you know, go label shopping with it, mm-hmm. we got like, what, 1,500 Spotify monthly listeners in like a month or something,
mm-hmm.
not counting YouTube or anything else. Like, the response has been fantastic. And just,
5, you know,
like every day we would go and, you know, like, oh, we got to check the numbers. Where are they at now? You know, it wasn't just like, oh, we're, you know, whatever. It's cool. It's like, where are we at now? You know, like, we get comments. And again, like, you know, we dropped it in like mid-January and we get comments like album of the year, and the year just began. It's like, it's awesome, you know?
Indeed.
So we have no signs of stopping there.
Nah, beautiful, man. Yeah. Once again, thank you for that, man. I really do. Appreciate your honesty and the love that you have for it and the passion that you have for the music, man. It shows. And two more questions here quickly. Distilled Entertainment. So what's up with them, man? How happy are you guys with them so far? And cause I know they're going to get you out there on some tours and stuff like that. So talk to me a little bit about them.
Oh yeah. We're very happy with them right now. It's been, you know, obviously the podcast here. But in addition to that, just talking to them about like release strategies,
mm-hmm.
being able to go out there and kind of shop around.
Right.
to try and find the right deal, the right label to help accelerate the things that are already going on.
Of course.
And understanding the pathways to things like trying to get in at WAC and stuff like that. So it's definitely a bridge to where we want to go.
Gotcha.
And having that available to us has been a big step for us. I mean, just having that representation and understanding that, you know, here's the tours that are coming through.
Right.
Here's what, you know, might be available. Mm-hmm. And since where we're at, we're able to take our time and do the right things. You know, there's no pressure for us to try and grab the first thing to grab the first thing.
Right.
You know, we can take our time and make this thing as big as we want it to be.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're learning things like as we go, and we're making some good decisions, but you get to a point where you need somebody that's more experienced, and with Distilled, they have the contacts and the experience, they've been doing this for a long time.
Yes.
And so, we think, okay, how can we bring ourselves up to the next level? Like, how can we get out to Europe? Like, how can we go across the country? Mm-hmm. And, they have the avenues and the support to do that kind of thing and to really, take some of the, mental load off of us. Like, okay, how are we going to do this? Right. Let's figure this out, and they say, hey, we can help you do that. Like, all right,
Great.
And, it's just one of those things where just the wisdom and experience pays off.
Yeah. Nothing like having a team, man. The team is so important.
Oh, yeah.
So many people that I've talked to, they were like, Lord, man, having that team, just like you say, taking some of that pressure off of trying to have to, having to do everything,
That's the same thing with the band, man.
It's what you love, but it can make it difficult. So the last question that I have for you guys, and I'll get you on out of here, just like I can continue talking to you, man. It's just been wonderful. Most definitely, man. Thank you very, very much. So
what was
the last song you listened to?
It might sound a little cheesy, but I was listening to Winter's Grasp on the way up here to the jam room.
Not cheesy.
Listening to my own music.
Yeah. Awesome.
That singer's pretty awesome. So,
you know what? I've just been shuffling music lately and just checking out new things. But I want to say the last one that I probably listened to, I think I was shuffling Type of Negative at the time, so it was probably either I Don't Want to Be Me or maybe even Wolf Moon. Type of Negative had a huge impact on me. Mm-hmm. Not only from just, appreciating the darker aspects of music and how there can be a beauty in darkness.
Right.
But just, the role that his bass plays is just it's forward, but it doesn't overpower and it's melodic. And also, just his singing, as a bass singer, it's just one of those bands where it just really kind of shaped, who I became as a musician and the kind of music that I got into,
mm-hmm.
And so when you talk about deep songs with deep meaning, like Winter's Grasp and, Brian's explanation of the lyrics, things like that, where it's these dark concepts of sorrow and loss, but there's beauty in it. And, yes. It's one of those things where it doesn't have to be sad. You can appreciate, the darkness and the lower points in life to contrast with the high points.
100%. And I will say, once again, thank you guys for that. I will say that it's dark, but it's beautiful. That's a great thing, man. That's something that you guys have captured and you do it very well. So I would like to say that. So the floor is yours, you guys. If you have anything you want to say, you want to talk some shit, you want to say whatever you want to.
Opeth, we're coming for you. Catatonia, we're coming for you. Or not. We'll just play shows.
Hey, whatever you got to say, bro. Come on.
Opeth, more like no path, because, we're taking your shot, bud. Bass players rejoice because, you don't have to live in the shadows anymore. If you like bass, listen to the album.
Awesome. So where can they get in touch with you guys?
Everywhere. We're available pretty much on all platforms, depending on when this is released. I mean, Facebook is a great place to get a hold of us. Okay. But we also, like I said, computer science degree. We have our own website, so you can get us at thefuneralprocession.com. Gotcha. Bandcamp, Twitter, Instagram,
TikTok.
We're
everywhere, man.
So everything is The Funeral Procession. Everything.
Yep. That's great. The Funeral Procession TX, to be exact.
Texas. All right. Okay. Got you. Well, my brothers, an amazing time. I really mean that. Thank you for blessing the show. I've had a great time, man. It's a great conversation, man. We're really
good
to get to know you guys better. And anytime you guys want to come back and do whatever, man, it's no question. Just let it be known. We'll work out a time and come and put your feet up and do what you do, man.
So, maybe we can do a music video review, you know, give you the first glimpse of it.
Man, it's all love, man. Whatever it is, man. Yeah, dude, I thank you guys so much.
Sneak peek, man. I'm down.
Hey, well, I really appreciate you. So, ladies and gentlemen, once again, it is yours truly, the big guy with the big show, the Lord. Pause. Nelson, that is. Yes, indeed. From Live and Loud with the Lord on the CMS Network with Five Royals Entertainment. With these two amazing dudes, with these two amazing individuals, with these two great human beings, Brian and Zod the Destroyer. From the funeral procession, we really appreciate you guys. Thank you so much, man. Great to have you. Great to have you. Great to have you.
This is Live and Loud with the Lord.